Our reading this morning is by Karen Solveig Anderson. I hate goodbyes. I hate everything about them. It bothers me that goodbye isn't really what I think or what I most often want to say. When those I love leave me or I leave them, goodbye isn't what I want to say. I want to tell them that their warm hand on my cheek, which caught my desperate tears, made me feel whole once again. I want to tell them that without their quick giggle and tender words, my life can feel lonely. But no, instead I tell them I love you, give them a big hug, and say goodbye. And they leave, and I feel hollow, discontented, and sometimes lost. I didn't want to say goodbye. When those I am in conflict with leave or I leave them, goodbye isn't what I want to say. I want to talk about pieces of me that are torn, scratched, and fragmented because of our interchanges. I want to tell them that maybe, just maybe, I've learned something new in how to be, in how to live, in how to grow. I wonder why it gets so complicated and sticky. But no, instead we say with fortitude, goodbye. I may shake their hand, glad that I won't have to see them again, but there is so much unsaid, and goodbye doesn't skim the root of my feelings. I didn't want to say goodbye. When time whispers to me, move on, here's the next step, say goodbye. I watch as my son walks into his first day of kindergarten, confident, filled with anticipation. These are my people, my life, he is thinking. Bye, Mom, he yells to me and signs love. I sign back. Bye, I whisper. But goodbye isn't what I want to say. I want to tell them that he is remarkable, brave, and I need more time to adjust to his boyhood, his self-assurance, his friends. I need more time to let go of one more tiny sliver of him. But no, instead I say goodbye. I feel jolted, awakened to time moving forward without me. I didn't want to say goodbye. When someone I love dies, goodbye isn't what I want to say. I want to tell them the truth about us. I want to set it straight, get to what was real, that their words could hurt, that I wasn't as strong as they'd hoped, that I still struggle to forgive them, that I miss those times we spent together. At the same time, I want to tell them that their love made life easier, freer, more accessible, that I'm grateful for their presence. I want to tell them that I forgive them for being human and hoping that they will do the same for me. But no, instead we say goodbye at a memorial service and I feel captured in a storm of emotions that swirl me around. I didn't want to say goodbye. When life turns to me someday and says, say goodbye, goodbye isn't what I want to say. I'll say I said goodbye my whole life. Let me say it right now. Just let me say it right. But life's hands will close around me, ushering me to something new. It will be the only time where goodbye is what I needed to say. I think the stories that Karen writes about in that reading show us that there can be power and peace in a good ending. But of course, as the song goes, breaking up is hard to do. As I mentioned before, this sermon topic was selected by Reverend Ken and Tommy O'Sullivan, who won the sermon topic at the auction. Since they told me the topic, I've been aware of how many breakup songs there really are out there. In fact, I was at the poorly timed for having to wake up early, the Taylor Swift concert last night. Any Taylor Swift fans or at least know her music? So, and there was probably at least an hour total of music that was breakup songs. We are never, ever, ever getting back together. Okay, so you know that. All right. And then Sinead O'Connor's tragic passing reminded me of her own blunt breakup song, "This is the last day of our acquaintance." And of course, there's the song behind the title of this sermon by Neil Sedaka, which he first released in 1962. "Breaking up is hard to do. Don't take your love away from me. Don't you leave my heart in misery. If you go, then I'll be blue. 'Cause breaking up is hard to do." And it's true, when I went through a breakup, a romantic breakup a long, long time ago, a friend made me a mix of all breakup songs. Angry, sad, nostalgic, even silly. And while I'm thankful that breakup songs is, to my knowledge, not a genre that's covered in our hymnals, I don't think it is, they do seem to serve a cultural and spiritual purpose. I think they help hold us in that moment of ending, offer us an opportunity to say or swear all that we wanted to say aloud, to name the loss, name what cannot be repaired, name what we wish to experience in our lives again, and feel the grief in our bodies, in the timbre of our own voice singing along. For a time, I had actually become a professional in goodbyes, witnessing and supporting other people's endings. Some of you may have known that I've had a very small side ministry as a somatic coach, which is a way of offering embodied support through one-on-one sessions, workshops, and retreats. I've led some of those pieces here in this congregation, especially at the beginning of the pandemic, as we adjusted to the trauma that we were going through collectively. So through this practice of this somatic coaching work, I've actually been asked to share most often with groups and individuals a ritual called conscious completion, or the gift of a good ending. I was taught conscious completion by my own coach, Dr. Vanisar Terakali, who learned it from her coach, a therapist named Denise Benson. But Vanisar writes that endings deserve our attention. Birth is sacred and momentous, and death, not just literal death, but beginnings and endings are equally potent. Many births and many deaths shape each day of our lives. Yet many of us enter new jobs or projects or relationships with more care than we exit them. Often we check out entirely during goodbyes. It's no surprise. Traumatic losses can leave us gun-shy about endings. It can feel scary or painful to say goodbye to familiar people and situations, even if we may have outgrown them, even if we know it's time, even if it's an ending that has to happen. Nevertheless, we need to practice conscious completion. This means being present to the best of our ability with the sensations, the thoughts, and the emotions that arise during endings. Maybe you felt something when you were dropping the paper into the water and watching it dissolve. Maybe you felt a little something catch in your throat, behind your eyes. Maybe a stillness or peace came over you. Maybe a sudden flush of anger or upset, a little warmth in your cheeks. Vanisar, my teacher, felt the power of conscious completion in one of her final visits with her mother. She wrote that during the last visit with my dying mother in 2010, she insisted that she was going to fight this, even though it was painfully clear that her body was winding down. I wanted us to speak honestly about this and about our relationship. I had things I was longing to say and questions. I wanted to hear whatever she needed to say to me, all that. Her refusal to admit this was likely our last visit prevented that conversation from happening, but I had to insist. Eventually, she agreed to talk as long as she could have a nap first. So she did. When she awoke, she said with steely resolve, "I'm ready." And for the next hour, we had the most truthful and focused conversation we ever had. we actually connected. It was, for me, a miracle. I felt satisfied, Vanisar said. And I found out later from her friends that she had repeatedly mentioned that talk, saying that we had such a good visit, and that she felt close to me for the first time in decades. Vanisar and her mother were both nourished by that conscious goodbye. Personally, I've led this practice of conscious completion over 50 times with groups and individuals across the country. I've used it with large groups. I've used it with individuals. I've shared it with ministers who are going through personal losses, from divorces to surgeries, taking place in the backdrop of their congregational ministry. I've used it to help ministers who are completing ministries that have been challenging or fraught with conflict. And each time a colleague has entrusted me with witnessing them in that sacred work of completing an experience, not just for the sake of completing it, which has value in and of itself, but so that they can have a fresh start for a new situation, having spent the time with a guide to let go of the emotions and dynamics of that which has ended. So you'd think, given all this experience with good goodbyes, I'd be approaching our goodbye as some sort of expert, that I'd be great at it. And I admit, I feel a bit like Anderson in our reading this morning, that goodbye doesn't feel like what I want to say at moments. Instead, there's so much more to our relationship as minister and congregation, to who each of us has been, the character that we have each played in our own Narnia, and what's ahead for each of us, some of it unknown. Still, I do believe the truth about conscious completion of goodbyes, that when we show up for endings, we invite others to show up, and that for my ministry and yours with your next minister, and for a time among each other, you need to show up for our ending taking place over this next week. There is a whole world at the threshold, beyond the wardrobe, our own Narnia. It's important for us to mark this ending well. For me to say to you, dear congregation, you matter, and you have been a part of my story. It's not easy to say goodbye, as the song goes, to break it up and to take leave. Another embodiment teacher I have says that some of us may have a conditioned tendency to move toward, away, or against an ending. You might know the style that you have, or maybe it's someone you love. You might know someone who tends to, at the end of a party or in a goodbye, to say, oh, we're going to travel with our families. Let me get your number. Makes lots of promises. We're going to have dinner. And we might call those folks the towards, moving immediately towards soothing the blow of the goodbye. And the second type is the aways, the people who leave behind, they leave before things end. In the sense of their minds, they're already back home next week, next year. They're only half present. Or maybe they literally do not show up and divert around it, leaving it unspoken and undefined. And then there's a third type, the against. These are the folks who can't really leave unless they make a very big mess by causing a breakdown, because that's the way they get to exit with some degree of comfort. This actually happened to me in a small seminar I was a part of quite suddenly, where a member of the group who had been quiet for most of our classes dropped a sudden, huge, critical feedback about each of us in the group on the very last day, tossing a stink bomb into a room and then walking away, fighting that goodbye hard, like a tempered tantrum meltdown thrown at the end of a birthday party. You can feel how these are conditioned tendencies. They feel a little familiar, don't they? And whether you are a toward or an away or against, they're all serving some purpose. They're patterns, each of us taking care of something. Each probably begins as a feeling in the body, a forgotten memory that lives in us, an ending that may have gone so poorly before. Do you move toward soothing the goodbye, away from the discomfort, or against it happening at all? Maybe you can remember a time you completed a relationship with someone, or how you recall that you responded in your own body. Maybe you've even thought about how you might approach our ending, the end of my ministry here. Maybe you'll decide, or you'll want, or you'll be tempted to skip over it. Maybe you've come up with ways that we'll meet again. Maybe your child self even wants to stage a protest of some kind. It's not that none of you have mentioned any of these ideas. We want to get really good at staying present to and through the end of things, naming how we might be conditioned to respond and offering ourselves the opportunity to center in our mutuality, name what has ended, turn away, and stay with the feelings. Whatever our choice in the matter of an ending, we may approach it the same way. Something has to end to be allowed to fully end in order for something new to begin. There are endings that we must make happen, doors that have to close, and there are those endings with which we might long for more, but the moment will not be recreated. We may find that feeling of longing, a pleasant remembrance of home, a memory of that might be a help rather than just a source of sadness. This concept in Welsh is called hiraeth and can give you an idea of what you want to live so you can try to embody that happiness and bring it with you in everyday life. Allowing that homesickness, that nostalgia for another time to be with us, for us to recognize it, and then to let it go. The effects of consciously completing an ending let us move into our next chapter. So as you move toward our goodbye, I invite you to consider a centered completion, so that you may free up the stuck energy or feelings about our own breakup that need to be allowed to be faced, to be felt in your body, and likely connect to some other losses, grief, or endings in your life, so that you might have the momentum for the next steps of your congregation. You do not have a minister for the short term, and so it's important for you to allow yourself to feel the change that is taking place, that is underway. And at the very least, naming what you are feeling to yourself, and hopefully, as you are willing and able, naming it with one another here. Something has to end to be allowed to end in order for something to begin. Each Sunday, we begin anew only to be led towards an ending. We practice centering our endings through our Unitarian Universalist ritual of lighting and then extinguishing a chalice. This practice helps me ground my own goodbye, that each time I return to a chalice, that particular flame is made of different particles from the last and yet is connected to each time that I've lit and extinguished a chalice with you. We call forth the life of our faith. The spark of new beginnings invites us into a sacred space. And even knowing that this particular flame will intentionally end, we fear not its end. For we know with brave hearts that from every ending in our lives, we are sent forth to make a new beginning, even if it's hard to do.